Blessed Monday, everyone. You know, I realized that I've been had a hole in my heart, like metaphorically, not literally. That'd be sad if it's a physical hole in my heart. But and
Yeah.
I didn't know why until I just realized we haven't been able to do we haven't done Fascism Fridays. That was a
I
part of
know.
the old regime.
I know.
What is
It's very,
if
very
I'm
sad.
if I can't name what I'm against, then who am I?
That's one of the things we'll be talking about this week.
Just to introduce ourselves before we dive into the juicy topic, which I'm looking forward to this one, and I'm hoping a lot of people tune in because it's a question I get a lot. But first, I'm Mark Van Steenwyk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And I feel like we have to sort of say something about the context and what's going on. We're here in
In
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
Yeah, we're here in Minneapolis, and the Derek Chauvin trial is starting up this morning. At least I think it's still starting up. I mean, there's all kinds of legal maneuverings going on, where it might be delayed a little bit, but I think it's basically starting up this morning.
I feel like people who support him should be called chauvinists. Just right
Yeah.
there. It's not even a pun because
Right
it's
there.
so
No.
laying out there in the open.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of discussion of all kinds of things. And that's, on our minds a lot all the time, for me anyway. But then, looking at Kathleen showing up here and saying hi to her, I think the other thing that's on my mind is what is the latest clusterfuck out of Missouri? And we had another one, right? We had
Yes.
another one. So I just have to say something about this, this pastor that gets up there and honestly is not like the best looking guy in the world. And goes on this rant about how women have to look and act like Melania Trump, or their husbands will stray. And just psychotic stuff. I mean, just like
Yeah,
so horrible.
I'm not one to make fun of appearances. You know, I'm actually pretty big about
Yes.
that. But in this
Yeah.
case, like if you are by
You'll
social
make me
standards
offended.
homely and you're going on a rant about how women are too ugly for their husbands, I feel like some mockery is justifiable at that point.
You're willing to make an exception for
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I would never make fun of
that.
your appearance, but now I feel like I kind of have to, because you're a big dick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just Missouri is sort of Missouri is just sort of like this rolling train of just hilarious stories. It's like it can't help itself.
Well, I mean, here's a great, just a good comment, you know, and this does connect with our topic. Derek writes, "Do they not even realize that her husband strayed anyway? Even if you're married to like a model like Melania Trump, it's not like people are faithful based upon the hotness of their spouse. That's not how that works.
It's not how it
It's not like,
works.
oh, if I can find anyone more attractive who will have me, I'm going to go to that. Like, that's not how it works." Or for most people, anyways. But this
Anyway.
is this thing, Missouri. You know, there's a reason Missouri is like this, and it has everything to do with the topic because it's really, I don't know if it's officially part of the Bible Belt, but if it isn't, it sure as hell should be. I mean, if you start thinking about middle American Christian hegemony, Missouri is towards the top of that list of driven by a certain kind of way of being Christian. And so when you start saying Christian, the first thing you think about is like a place like Missouri more than you think about, I don't know, revolutionary Ireland or something more interesting than Missouri.
Getting a lot of good Missouri comments now.
Okay, I say let them stray. I have the power in the relationship. Go Missouri. Missouri, the Florida of the Midwest. Yeah, without the beaches and stuff.
Yeah, so right.
It's replace marriage with free love. That could be a whole topic by itself.
Yes,
but yeah.
Yes. The hippies already tried that.
Yeah, and there's different ways of trying to reimagine what it means to have romantic relationships in the modern era. It's not even that recent, but I mean, it seems like these come in waves. before we move on to the real topic,
it's getting worse.
Florida is the prolapse of the USA. Oh my God, that's apt.
Sort of.
Some way. There's great people in Florida, so I'm sorry for all the good Floridians. But this Christian thing. So, like, if, you know, every time we have a horribly oppressive president, which, I mean, in my mind, since I'm, you know, good anarchist, they're all that way. But especially when you have these really Bible-thumpy, conservative, evangelical-type presidents or people that are willing to co-opt that, like Trump, you have people saying, that's it. I can no longer call myself an evangelical. There's those people. And then there's the people like, bah, this whole Christianity thing, it's done. I'm done. I'm walking away. And I have no ill will towards people who walk away. Like, I'm not one of these people who, when somebody says, like, I'm done with, I'm not going to church, I'm not a Christian anymore, you know, always find these people saying, good luck, you're never going to find perfection anywhere else. You might as well hunker down. Like, that kind of, those aren't real Christians anyways. You need to look harder. Like, these people who put the onus on the wounded to find their own healing, like, and I'm not like that at all. Like, I don't care. If people can't find life within Christianity, then go find life somewhere else.
But just don't go.
But they're still like, well, then people are like, why the hell are you a Christian, Mark? Dan, why are you a Christian? Like, you've studied religions. You know how this is. You're adept at pluralism. Why the hell, with everything that Christianity has come to mean, would you call yourself a Christian, Dan? What's the point?
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting about that label as an identity is that I really don't think of myself that way. Right? So, which maybe seems weird or odd to people, but, you know, so my personal journey with this, right, is that I grew up in... my family background is in Judaism, and I grew up in a very, I would say, secular but culturally Jewish household, and you know, and had some exposure to Judaism as a religion, I would say, and you know, and a lot of it was great. A lot of the religious stuff in terms of the image of God that was being portrayed, I really had a problem with and, you know, didn't really like. So then I discovered the contemplative life and the spiritual life, and that I was incredibly interested in. And I initially contacted that through Buddhism. And wanted to learn a lot about that, wanted to practice. And as I got involved in these different Buddhist communities very intensely and was, you know, really doing the meditation practice thing, I was never interested in Buddhism as a religion. And in fact, you know, one of my teachers, Tartang Tulku, was pretty adamant about the fact that he wasn't really all that interested in Westerners becoming Buddhist. I think I mentioned this before on this, because he just said, you know, this is not your lineage. This is not your tradition. And you can learn from this and you can learn about all these practices, but you also need to deal with your lineage and your tradition. And so after a while of doing this, I started encountering Christian contemplatives and began to get very interested in this person of Jesus and what his teachings were about, and then what people had encountered mystically since he was around. And so, you know, to me, when I read the Gospels, let's say, I don't hear Christianity. I mean, I hear Judaism. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think historically speaking, Christianity is actually a total misread of what Jesus was up to. You know, I would describe it much more as being about, you know, everybody becoming Jewish rather than starting a new religion. But I mean, be that as it may, you know, to me, what resonates is that this is my lineage. I mean, this literally is my ancestry. And so this person, as a spiritual teacher in my lineage, is a very powerful figure. Now, that doesn't mean I can't learn from other spiritual teachers, and I do all the time. But, you know, I consider Jesus really to be my main teacher. And so in that sense, you know, I can say, well, yeah, I'm Christian. But I would also say at the same time that most of what passes as the religion based on Jesus is crap. I mean, I would just say that most of it is garbage. And, you know, I remember being involved in Christian contemplative communities for a while and then going to my first kind of Christian regular worship service and just being horrified. Being like, I don't want to do this, So yeah, it's a very interesting conundrum, because in every, and this is true in every religion, right? So in every religion, you have the kind of contemplative stream, right? So the thing is, if you go, for example, to Thailand, and you go to Bangkok, and you go to these Buddhist temples, you know, you see all these people bowing down to giant statues of the Buddha. And, you know, the Buddha would be horrified by this and would say, this is garbage. This isn't what I was talking about. So, you know, you always have the contemplative stream of a religion, and then you have the more religious, you know, what you might even call secular stream. And those two often look really different.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of issues with that.
Yeah. My own reasons for being Christian, I obviously boil it down to three things. And one is negative. Like, to me, I consider being a Christian the same way I consider being a white person. Like, I'm formed by Christianity, I'm formed by whiteness, and I can't really walk away from being white. I have to deal with it. And I can't really walk away from being formed as a Christian. I have to deal with it. Now, you can convert to other religions and find other traditions. And so I think one way that people do deal with it is trying to counterform into another religious tradition and challenge that. But for me, there's a couple reasons why I don't. One of them is, you know, when I was nine, you know, I've had these mystical experiences with Jesus. Like, to me, they weren't just some vague sense. And the biggest one, I remember when I was 19 and my mom was dying and I was working at a job. I wrote about this in the book on Kingdom. I had a temp job sweeping a giant freezer that held McDonald's french fries. It was like a warehouse that just held McDonald's french fries. And so I'd go in every other day to sweep it because the refrigerant would kick out this black dust. So it's the most depressing job. And my life is depressing.
Would the black dust become part of the french fries?
No, because they're in boxes.
Oh,
so then they ship these frozen boxes to the different stores to be deep fried and shoved into faces. So I was really depressed. And I had people in my church, my charismatic church, because I didn't go to this Christ for All Nations in Dallas, Texas, right out of high school, that I'd missed God's will for my life. That's what they were telling me. I was on God's plan B. So I'm depressed. My church is going through a church split. And so I'm like, I renounce this. So I strip naked in my bedroom and try to formally forsake Jesus by blaspheming as much as I could in my 19-year-old way. And I was depressed. And as I'm laying there, like trying hard, and I can't, it just wasn't working. All of a sudden, I felt Christ come to me saying, "It's okay. This sucks. You can let it all go. I'm not going anywhere." That was basically, in so many words, what happened. So
Right.
to me, I'm like, okay, well, I have an experience of this Christ. So, and the tradition that explores what that means is Christianity. And so you get, like you said, the really interesting reflections on that. Some really cool people grappling with what does it mean to encounter Christ in the world. And you get the shitty versions of that. And so I try to like connect with the prophetic tradition within that Jesus was a part of, and that you see the best of Christianity being a part of this prophetic lineage. And the other third part reason is like, at the end of the day, there's a reason I'm an anarchist, and it's like, fuck all of you who are messing up Christianity. You're not telling me what Christianity is. I'm going to tell you what Christianity is. So there's a little bit of a, like, no, I'm not going to let you have this and ruin it even worse. So those are kind of the things that kind of keep me anchored in this. Well, it's so.
So would you say that you're shaking the dust off of your French fries and
Yes.
going to the next town?
Casting my French fries before swine. I don't know. It breaks.
I thought you were going to say that you found a French fry that looked like Jesus. So I thought that's where
That would be
that
amazing.
was
I would have, and I just deep fried it by itself and ate it as like my own little Eucharist.
There you go.
Some comments coming in that I think are good. Going back to the Missouri pastor, Missouri jerk pastor yelled a lot about how butch women are undesirable, and I would just like to point out the overwhelming evidence against that argument. Give me an hour, and it could definitely include red carpet photos of PowerPoint and a cool dozen queer blog listicles. So you know,
Okay.
when posed with a problem, Dr. Parent goes right to research mode as a historian. I like that.
There you go. I'd like to see that PowerPoint for sure.
That'd be a good YouTube video too.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Derek writes, "I'm a pastor, and sometimes I ask myself the same question. I try and move away from the label as an identity, but even saying Jesus follower has its own baggage." And again, Stefan says, "Replace Christian with Jesus follower." I don't do that. You know why? Because almost everyone I've ever met who's done that move has been an evangelical. I'm not a Christian. I'm a Jesus follower. It's a total classic evangelical power move, a play. And so I just find it, I'm just distrustful.
Yeah, and so that's why, I mean, that's why I like the term teacher and my being a student. I mean, I don't know if I've told this story here, but it took me 25 years to come up with this. Because I'm just, I guess, a little dense or something. But, this was a search for the answer to the great American question, what do you do? Right. That's when you meet somebody, you're like, "Well, what do you do?" And I just had a really hard time with all the different answers that I was coming up with. And
That's
so
totally like,
I
I
just,
never know how to explain what the hell it is that I do.
I just, I didn't like any of them, So I'd say my latest job, and sometimes that felt okay, and sometimes it just didn't, and didn't really seem to fit with my vocation. It was just more, what I happened to be doing to make money at the time. And so, as I said, it took me about 25 years to come up with this. But now, when people ask me that, I say I'm a student of the spiritual life, and I really like that answer.
It really is. It really
And
encapsulates a lot.
and so that's where, to me, using this term teacher, it kind of gets me out of the religious realm with a lot of this, and more identifying with the contemplative tradition.
I need to find my version of that, because we I start trying to explain, and like a paragraph in, they're like, anarchism, mysticism, cult, what the fuck? I don't even
Exactly.
know what you're talking about anymore.
Yeah, no, I needed to have the elevator speech because I would do the same thing. I mean, I'd just sort of start babbling, and I could tell that I was like not working.
I'll tell people, I direct a nonprofit that explores the intersection between radical politics and deep spirituality. What does that mean? I don't know. Sounds good, though.
Yeah.
CK asks, is religion just becoming antiquated, and do you think there is a move to the more personal, reflective lifestyle and spirituality? Yeah. I mean, there's that trend, but I don't think religion's going anywhere. And to me, you know, I mention this all the time. Talal Asad, great scholar, talks about how, and Richard Horsley, a bunch of scholars talk about, like, we might think that religion is being bracketed into the smaller category of spirituality, but then it's being displaced by civil religion, because these structures of people collectively orienting towards the ultimate good or their ultimate values and creating rituals and systems to reinforce that. I mean, that's what religion is. And so I don't see that going anywhere. But there is a trend towards more of a personal spirituality. But we've had that lots of, that trend has come and gone forever. Yeah. It's been a thing for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a really interesting question, CK, and you know, and a lot of people are talking about this. You know, are we entering this sort of post-religious period in humanity? And you know, and certainly in the United States and in Western Europe, you've got, you know, tens of millions of people that have no involvement with any kind of organized religion at all. And they, many of them are very involved with what they would consider to be spiritual practices. You know, for a long time, I mean, early in the late in the 20th century, in the 90s and late 80s and 90s, I mean, I was saying that interreligious issues are going to be sort of the theological issue of the 21st century. And you know, as we're going through the 21st century, I feel like that's very, very, I mean, I still would believe that. And so, you know, I don't know if it's so much of religion being antiquated. Again, if religion is a set of kind of ceremonies and teachings and a way that people organize their lives around greater questions. But I do think that you know, religion and religious teachings are mixing in a way that is really, really new. And so what that starts to look like is, you know, that's an interesting question. And
yeah, we definitely see, I mean, the possibilities for cross-pollination and innovation within spirituality and religion, it's like, I mean, how can we not have more of that the more our world becomes interconnected? Derek writes, sometimes I feel like Richard Gere in An Officer and a Gentleman. When Lou Gossett Jr.'s character is trying to break him down, Gere's character says, I got nowhere else to go. It's what Jesus said, you know, are you going to leave too? Are you going to leave me too? And the disciples said, we don't have anywhere else to go. Sometimes that's the only thing that keeps you around. Like, what else am I going to do? Jesus, anarchy in the USA. Yes. I find Christian anarchy very appealing. You know, try visiting the Christian anarchy pages on Facebook for a while. It'll cause you to question everything.
It'll be less appealing.
Oh, my God. But yeah, I'm generally on that page. Stefan writes, most of Christianity is worshiping Jesus while ignoring his teachings. I mean, that's totally true.
No.
I mean, because the living Christ, like the stuff Jesus says is really not conducive towards, you know, having power and oppression over people. So, of course.
And, you know, and that's, again, part of this difference between religion and any sort of contemplative or wisdom tradition and community practice, is that religion is often just about worship, right? So it's, again, it's a set of teachings, rituals, beliefs, attitudes, activities, and you know, you go through those things, and so then, it's about this worship phenomenon. And again, I point to the Buddhism thing, because you know, here in America, people think Buddhism is this kind of non-religion, and it's this, you know, great pure thing because only a certain set of those teachings have come over here. And as I said, you know, go to Bangkok and watch people bowing down to a 6-ton golden Buddha. I mean, this Buddha is made of solid gold. and it weighs 6 tons. And you've got all these people just, you know, bowing down to this. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is not what the Buddha talked about. And it's the same, it's exactly the same phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. And Hell writes, or when people say, I'm not religious, it's not about religion, it's about relationship. The attempt of distancing oneself with that you deem as boring or monotone or judgmental, but at the end of the day, religion is an amoral term. I can't help but think of the movie Saved and all the attempts of making Jesus cool. Yeah, that's another version of the I'm not a Christian, I'm a Jesus follower. Relationship, yeah. Not religion.
No.
I mean, that was part of the thing that did it for me, is I kept hearing everyone around me saying it's about a personal relationship with Jesus. And I'd had these mystical experiences, in the proper mystical sense of like union and connection, instead of fervored kind of experiences where you just feel weepy for Jesus. I've had those too. But I said, well, how do you do that? And they'd say, you know, read the Bible and pray. I'm like, that doesn't sound like a relationship to me. And so there's a little bit of a bait and switch that happens within evangelical spaces.
Yeah, and one of the things, you know, and I think that, you know, what you're getting at here, which is very important, and this is one of the things that's talked a lot about in the contemplative tradition, Choyam Trungpa, who's another one of my Buddhist teachers, and a very problematic person in a lot of ways, but wrote a great book called Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, where he talks about the supermarket shopping of religion and this phenomenon of, yeah, when you encounter something in your religion that you don't like, you just chuck it and you just go on to something else. Right now again, the caveat that Mark started with is super important. I mean, if you've been abused by your religion, chuck it. Fine.
Do
whatever you need to do to heal and to work with that. And that's super, super important. So that's not what we're talking about here. We see this all the time with the teachings of Jesus, right? I mean, people who identify as Christians, who see themselves as very, you know, righteous, healthy Christians, they'll encounter something that Jesus says in the Bible that's hard, and they're just like, well, forget that. I just don't need to do that. Right? And that's the thing that all of us have in terms of our ego selves and the struggle that we have with community, with society, with any set of spiritual religious teachings and practice. There are things we bump up against that we don't like. And so, you know, the temptation is to get rid of that or to ignore it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the life of practice says is, well, don't do that. Just go deeper into it. You know, and again, I love your analogy to whiteness, because I think that's a great one. You know, you can't chuck that if you're a white person in America, much as we try all the time to chuck that. And so can we go deeper into what that means and how that has formed us and damaged us to find liberation? But that's a tension that's constantly there.
You know, whiteness, Christianity, it's not one-to-one analogy, but there's a lot of overlap, because part of the task of grappling with your whiteness is, the term whiteness is generally bad, but there's some good pieces in there. Like if my great-grandfather came over from Ireland, that's part of the white story, even though Ireland isn't white. Like Ireland is Irish, and it got sucked into whiteness. And so there's little seeds for great things in there in the midst of it all, and you have to sort through and discern and find which things to put away. And it's a lifelong process. And to me, that's the relationship I have with Christianity, is like, and even the best figures, like you mentioned one of your teachers who was problematic, and you've talked about him before. You know, St. Francis was problematic, not in the same ways, but he could be abusive. Mm-hmm. But just so, like, there's a lot of sorting that goes on, and I'm just going to stick around with Christianity because there's too much that's in it that's important to me. Derek writes, I still find Walter Wink very helpful in understanding these systems, which take on a life of their own. Yes, Walter Wink, yeah. William Stringfellow, talks about similar things with principalities and powers. Good stuff. Stefan writes, Derek, I'm more for Christian or Jesusist democratic socialism. Okay. Mm-hmm. Derek writes, I like the appeal of it as well. I'm also a fan of distributivism, as G.K. Chesterton proposed, but it's outside, but outside the Roman Catholic framework. Just getting a little bit of political insider talk here. James writes, Followers of the Way has potential for describing following Jesus as a mode of spirituality. I tend to like that. I have known people that were part of the Way International, which is a cult, and so they would hate that. So it shows the problematic nature of all these words, but Followers of the Way is kind of a little bit what they called the early Jesus followers.
I was going to say, I mean, that's the original language of the communities that were following Jesus. So that certainly has very old roots. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's interesting to note from a historical point of view, and this always happens at the beginning of these kinds of movements. You know, it's like the way that we talk about, you know, Lutheranism is different than Luther, Calvinism is different than Calvin, Christianity is different than Jesus, right? So, you know, at the beginning of the Jesus movement, where it was called just the Way, you know, we have all this documentation from Roman sources where they were very confused by what was happening because it didn't look like it was a religion. Right? And so, again, this was the same thing with the Buddha, you know, and it took a long time for it to become Buddhism. I mean, there were just these students of the Buddha and they were trying to do this. And, you know, then over time, these things get kind of ossified or institutionalized. And, you know, then all the things happen at that point.
Derek writes, a heavy-duty relationship is much more complicated than evangelicalism talks about. It's about a relationship with God and a responsible, caring, serving relationship with our fellow human beings. It's not an either-or false dichotomy. We're getting past time, so I'm going to blaze through some of these comments. CK asks, Dan, did it affect you in a negative way when your teacher told you Buddhism wasn't for you?
No, not at all. I mean, it was actually very affirming because I said I never had any interest in Buddhism as a religion. I mean, I didn't want to become a Buddhist. I just wanted to learn about meditation.
Which is, if you read some of the stuff that, you know, the Buddha taught, it's all these very practical approaches to different forms of meditation and ways, things to contemplate, which I find powerful. Mm-hmm. And I wish there was more of that in the New Testament. Because there's not a lot of it in the New Testament. The Lord's Prayer is not a really great way of figuring out how to different forms of meditation. Jesus doesn't teach a lot about that. Jesus writes, so the etymological root of the word religion, and it's a Latin word religare, which means to bind, which I think touches a core part of what it really is to be religious. And for me, also a reason why I consider myself not only spiritual, but also religious. To bind yourself to a certain path. For me, the word religion definitely does not necessarily imply dogmatically following authorities, but it does imply a commitment to a certain path, generally including a certain moral code. I'm with you, Juiced. When people would say I'm spiritual, not religious, I would sometimes say, well, I'm religious and not spiritual, but that's not true. I'm both. Because it is binding yourself to a community instead of practices. Institutionalized religion is another thing, and organized religion is... But religion, I think, is almost inescapable anytime you have people doing stuff together out of a set of commitments. Gus.
All right, a few more comments because we do have day two, so we can come back to a lot of these things.
Gus writes, one of the things that keeps me in the Jesus tradition is already feeling unmoored. If I let go of the last vestiges of Christianity, I feel like I'd have even less tools available to me to help me evaluate decisions as ethical. The tradition at least has some tools. Mm-hmm. Gus writes, this was good for me today. I've been feeling very isolated because of all of this. Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah.
Derek points out that labels change over time. That's the thing. Language. Everyone wants to come up with a new term for everything, but then, you know, in 3 years, that term will become problematic. Language is very fluid and frustrating. Tim writes, love worshiping Jesus but ignoring his teachings. True.
And Tim is greeting us from Liverpool
in the UK. Liverpool, UK.
Awesome.
Greetings.
That's great.
From across the pond. Catherine writes, I'm interested in the tension of what to do with our religious tools for those of us who don't want to practice exactly the way we were taught and or in ways many in that tradition don't recognize as legitimate. I mean, that's a great question. The idea that I do have to relate to my history and identity but don't have to practice a certain way is still hard for me to remember, having been formed by a more rules-based view than what it means to be a Christian.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something we can probably focus a lot on Wednesday. The question of how to have a fluid sort of identity that's still faithful is a big challenge, and it's becoming more of a challenge for people as we move further into this pluralism that we live in. Last couple comments, and then we'll call it a day. Stefan writes, a random question. Do you think Jesus was an Essene, came out of that tradition? They were also peaceful, egalitarian, etc.
There are a lot of folks that think so. John the Baptist definitely seems to have come out of that tradition. You know, this is one of the things that, again, most people don't even realize. So in Jesus's time, like, this is why the word Jewish is so problematic, particularly the way it's used and translated into English in John's gospel. There was really no such thing as the Jewish religion in Jesus's time. People were members of the 12 tribes. They were, you know, followers of this particular deity. You know, in and around the area of Jerusalem, there were some, you know, 70 different kind of sects of this emerging religion, many of which, and often the dividing line fell around whether or not you liked the temple authorities in Jerusalem. So again, Judaism wasn't a synagogue-based religion at this time. No. And so, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of these folks that were kind of non-temple followers, and it does seem pretty clear that whether or not he personally came out of that or just, you know, took on that stance, I mean, Jesus was definitely articulating a lot of that negativity in his teachings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Derek writes, labels are difficult as marginalized communities use these labels to bring themselves together, but then as those marginalized communities become less marginalized, the terms then become institutionalized. I mean, Christianity started as a marginalized term. They're called, first called Christians in Antioch, you know, and then there's this trend, like what Dan's pointing out, and there wasn't one, there's never been one thing called Christianity either.
No.
There, even in the beginning, there were various approaches to the way, and then, of course, this to me, this impulse to centralize and codify everything is problematic to begin with. It's like most of the, there's no such thing as Hinduism as one thing. There wasn't one thing called Judaism as one thing. And this impulse to somehow name everything as one thing sounds kind of nice and unifying, but it's usually coercive and centralizing in an unhealthy way. Mm-hmm.
All right, great. Well, wonderful to be with all of you. Thanks for all the great comments and reflections, and we'll be back on Wednesday for more.
See you Wednesday, everybody.
Bye.